about Moshe Rabbeinu and the Nevuah Moshe Rabbeinu, I said to myself, I will also discuss something else, which happens to be in this week's Parsha, a very difficult Parsha, which Soloveitchik was very fond of. There is a famous Kasha, and it's a well-known question, and it's one which I'm sure you are familiar with, here in Perek Yates of Yisro, starting with the second Aliyah, Bahimi Mochras, Vayeshe Moshe Lish by the Sahom, Vayamud Hom HaMoshe Men HaBokad Erev. One of the roles of the Manhig Yisrael that we see certainly with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was not only a Navi Shein Kamo, Lokam Navi Yobi Yisrael Kamoshe, but Moshe Rabbeinu was also a Shofet, as we see here from this Pasuk. Vayeshe Moshe Lish by the Sahom. Oh, the Chumashim are right up there. Maybe we'll get them out.
Or only in the Chumash today?
Why don't you give them all chumashim? They have Tanakh, so they can actually look in the Tanakh, but it's fine. That's true. Thank you. So, there is a very fascinating mechilta. The Rashi actually quotes it over here. Vahimi Mochras. Rashi says it was Motzoi Yom Kippur. A very famous Rashi. Moshe Rabbeinu actually... This entire dialogue between himself and his father-in-law happens on Motzoi Yom Kippur. Both, not only Rashi quotes this, but the Ramban brings it. It's a Mechilta on Shmos that indicate that. So somehow, the word Vayimi Machras is connected to the coming of Yisrael. Ibn Ezra actually also discusses it over here. But the connection is, as you can see, is the Yom HaKippurim. Of course, the question is, one question, which is an obvious one, what compelled Chazal to associate the idea of Mishpah, the Moshe Rabbeinu being a judge, with Yom Kippur? Secondly, my father was very, Olam Hashalom, was very concerned about the following question, which is an obvious question. The Torah goes on to say, take a look in Yudala, we'll just read the Pesukim, Vayachal Seim Moshe, Eskal Asher Hu Oseh Lo'om. What a strange language. Right away you should be sensitive to language that's awkward in the text of the Chumash. The father-in-law Moshe sees all that he is doing to the people. What is the nature of that statement? Moshe Rabbeinu is judging Klal Yisrael. They're coming to him for issues, piskei halacha, piskei din, perhaps advice. Why is Yisrael somehow, the way he articulates what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing, he is doing something to the people? And it continues. Vayomer, Ma dabar hazeh asher ato oseh lo'om. Why are you doing this to the people? What do you mean, why is he doing this? He's engaged in a very constructive, significant enterprise called Klal Yisrael. He's sitting on Dinei Torah. What do you mean, what's he doing to the people? And he continues, Madu ato yoshev levadecha, why are you sitting alone? V'chalom nitzav alecha min bo grad oren. It's a one-man show that Moshe Rabbeinu is involved in. So right away, Moshe Rabbeinu tells his father-in-law, "I am Moshe L'chosno," and we don't exactly understand what is the response of Moshe Rabbeinu. Ki yavo ilai ha'am l'gosh elokim. People come to seek at Hashem. Why don't you? You have a Tanakh. Ki elohem davar bo ilai b'shafati ben ishu ben re'eu v'odati eschuki elokim b'estarosa. What is his function? What is his mandate? People are seeking Hashem. They have an issue. Moshe Rabbeinu adjudicates between two Jews, and he's informing them, "Baruch Yelokim." Pasuk Yitzayin, I continue, beginning of Yisro, Perek Yuches. Vayomer Chosein Moshe Elav, Lo Tov Adavah She'ata Oseh. What you're doing is not good. Why? Naval Tibo Gamato Gamam Azeh Sheimach. What does it mean, Naval Tibo? What an expression. The way the Targum translates it, Rashi Miad quotes the Targum, which the Targum translates over here, Mila Tila. Essentially, you're going to suffer from ennui, is the proper term, a French term. I'm sure they use that in Montreal. You'll be fatigued.
How'd you get it?
Correct. You will suffer from exhaustion. It will lead to your denouement. In another French term, since we have the French here. Naval tibo gamato gamahomazeh sheimach ki chaved nimcha adavar lasucha aser alavadecha. Whatever you're doing, you can't do it as a one-man show. And therefore, he gives him a famous piece of advice. You test atosh mabekodi yatzucha v'yelokim imach heye atola mula elokim ve'veso atos advoim elokim. And you will teach them pasukhaf isato esem esachukim esatoros v'odatul masaderach yelchuba esamasa sheyasun. And then, of course, we have a suggestion on the part of Yisrael that he set up a judicial system. There are a lot of qualities that are required. Chazal speak about it. Rashi actually has some of this. He points out individuals who obviously are not subject to, you can't flatter them or engage in sycophantic behavior, and somehow they will, shall we say, be partisan to your particular position. They'll show favoritism. Anshi emes have to be honest people. Soni batza, people who can't be bought for, shall we say, the money. And Rashi quotes a number of Gemaras. And there'll be an entire system, namely higher courts, lower courts, sorry alofim, sorry meos, sorry chavishim, sorry asaras. B'shaptu esav b'chaleis, v'ayu kaldav v'agol yavu yadachal v'chaldav v'akot nishpitu v'ayim, v'akya me'alachim v'asur itach. They'll help you share the burden. And if you follow this piece of advice, pasuk chav gimel, b'tzivcha elokim v'yachol ta'amod, v'gam kolom azeh, al mikomo yavu b'shalom. So essentially, what's he telling him? You can't maintain this one-man show. It's g'day to bring together a whole group of individuals who will put together a judicial system. So my father, Roshan, was absolutely astounded. Why, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the seichel to understand this, shall we say, rather elementary, fundamental piece of advice. He needed his father-in-law, his shver, to come to him and, shall we say, impart to him this sagacity. He was not sufficiently perspicacious and sagacious to understand that this is elementary, my dear Watson.
Sherlock Holmes.
Correct. Good. So that's question two. So question one was, Vahimi Machras, what Rashi says over here, Mimachras Yom Kippurim, which they are Ramban, Ibn Ezra, what's the connection between this and Yom Kippur? Now in general, Mimachras is a striking term, the day after. The day after implies, obviously, something happened prior to this. That's clearly of great significance. That's generally the term Mimachras. It's found actually a number of times in Tanakh. I don't know if you remember in Kisiso, that probably would be the best example, now that I'm in the process of recalling this matter. You see, in Kisiso, there the Torah says, right after, in the aftermath of the Teda Egel, that's where the Torah describes, using this kind of terminology, obviously the Teda Egel was a rather massive, jarring, impacting kind of experience that obviously put yourself back. Look at Paraklam of Bez, Pasuk Lamed. And this is Moshe Rabbeinu who enters the scene. And let's say Pasuk Chavav, page 254 over here. Vayama Moshe B'Shah Amachan, Emil Hashem Eloi, Vayasifu Eloi, Kabanei Levi. And he tells them to go ahead and essentially punish those that were involved. And 3,000 people died. Vayama Moshe Chavtes, Milu Yatem Hayom Hashem. And Vayimi Machros, there also the term is utilized. Vayom Moshe Alam, Atem Chatosim Chato Gdola. So here, Mimachas also is used in what sense? Contrasting this with what happened, that is the now, with what happened prior to now. What happened prior to now? Prior to now was the terrible, shall we say, downfall of Klal Yisrael, the Cheta Egel. They were clearly in a state of inebriation, of intoxication. And now, Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to, shall we say, put things together and somehow resolve the matter. That's what the next pasuk says in the end of Lamed. Ulay achapa b'yachataskim. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, and Hashem, of course, tells him, you're giving me the shorachanim. So the term Vayimi Machras, I'll give you another example. You remember, undoubtedly, in Tanakh, Rav Soloveitchik was very fond of this pasuk in Tanakh. Vayi v'aboker k'tzeis hayayin. You know, people get drunk. I think we heard today a very beautiful shmooze from Rabbi Rich Leiter, an outstanding shul zofiyan yuzdaiti. And he spoke about the before and the after. So before, people are in a state of intoxication. What can we do? They were nishba bein hagoyim. Many people, before they begin to learn Torah in a very profound way, are, to a large extent, influenced by the ambience, the non-Jewish environment that they're surrounded with, and become intoxicated with it. And they're drowning in it. And they're in, shall we say, a very difficult situation. But after a period of time, when they come to the recognition of Hashem Yisbarach, and they continue to grow in Torah and mitzvahs, etc., then they are now ready to transform their lives. That's why he mimachras. Yeah. So the word mimachras always is a contrast before and after. And here you have that contrast actually very clearly in our parsha and in Kisisa. And you have it a number of other times. The awareness of Kedusha that comes in the wake of, shall we say, Tumah. First we have a certain degree of an abyss. And then we subsequently, Baruch Hashem, are able to be mosif from the chol by adding kodesh, by adding kedusha. Okay, so that's the language of Ahim and Rachas. Actually, I have a number of other examples where you see this idea, this notion. But whatever the case is, it would seem that Chazal here, going back to our Pasha, Chazal, as I said, say that Ahim and Rachas refers to, the way Rashi quotes the Ramban, this, referring to Nimachas Yom HaKippurim. Yom HaKippurim, of course, as you know, is the day of L'fnei Hashem Titzaru, really the most profound, the most Kodesh day of the entire year. And somehow Chazal see a connection between these two items. So I just want to, again, re-articulate the two questions that we asked. Question one was on the Machas Yom Kippurim, the Rashi Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, the Chilta side over here. And two is, what exactly were the, what was the Chiddush of the Yisrael's piece of advice, which L'chura Moshe Rabbeinu himself on his own could clearly have come to without having to have recourse to his father-in-law. So I want to now share with you what I heard from Moran HaGoyin HaRav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik Zatzal on this matter, what the Rav said about this issue. And I think he has a very fundamental yesod here that I would like to share. And it's also nogea to the issue we've been talking about, is the level or the madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu. And we've been speaking about it in terms of his level of Nevuah. And Moshe, as I said, is not only a Navi, he's also a Melech. He has a Din Melech. And the Psukim and Dvarim, that say, Vahi Bishur Melech, Vesasi Rashi Yom, Yachad Shita Yisrael, Machok Zavishenu, that refers to Hashem, refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe, as you see here, is also a Shefet. Vayesha Moshe, Lishpay Nisam, he has a Din Shefet, which also, we know that there were many Nevi'im who also were involved in Shiput as well, that we see from Sefer Shoftim, and that's a separate discussion. But if you remember the Gemara Sanhedrin, which you probably may have come across at one point in your education, and Rav Soloveitchik has actually a piece on this in a Sefer called Reflections of the Rav, which undoubtedly, there are two volumes. One is blue, one is a grayish volume. You probably read both, I assume. But in the first volume, I assume, Reflections of the Rav. The Rav discusses the Gemara Sanhedrin in the first paragraph. The Gemara speaks about Pshara. Pshara, are you familiar with Bitsua or Pshara, which means that, in general, Pshara, of course, is the generally what Bati Dinim do today. It means they don't necessarily, when they paskin Dafka, how shall I put it, Yiko Badin Sahar, that's what the Gemara calls in Sanhedrin also. They don't paskin exactly to the fullest extent of what is the legal juridic psak, but rather they try to find some sort of a pshara, which is a compromise. That's what the Gemara discusses in the first Pekah Sanhedrin, pshara or bitsua, and we consider that to be a psak al pi halacha. The reason why the Gemara says pshara tzricha kinyan, it requires a kinyan al pi halacha, because it's not really the, shall we say, ideal, puristic, legal kind of psak that normally would, shall we say, be operative in an ideal world. But we don't live in an ideal utopian world. We live in a real world, ups and downs and zigzags and all types of human beings and personalities and what have you. And therefore, there's a need for pshara. And here, we're talking about someone who's not necessarily engaged in pure din, a pure din Torah. Because a pure din Torah, if you, I'll just give you an example. We don't really have right now sitting here people from England, but maybe Montreal, I don't think so. The magistrates in England, do you know what they look like? They are, to use the terminology, bewigged and besotted. That is the proper term. Have you ever seen a picture of a magistrate in a British court? What does he have on his head? They wear sheklach. They all wear sheklach. What?
Yeah, we have in Quebec.
That's exactly what I'm referring to. That's why I said Montreal. I saw it myself in Quebec as well. They have a lot of other things in Quebec that are fascinating. One day, another discussion. But anyway, so in the United States, you don't have that. You don't have any such notion. I think I told you I was once in a court, but I don't want to get into that now because I will get off the topic. So that's essentially din. What is pshara? Pshara is not, shall we say, din. Pshara is, I guess in English you'd call it arbitration. You try to come to some sort of...
What does that mean?
Arbitration means that you are engaged in an effort to sort of settle the altercation between two individuals, a kind of settlement, exactly, as opposed to Iker Hadin. There's a Gemara here, actually, I wrote it down. The Gemara here in Sanhedrin, the first paragraph, the Gemara says, Mitzvah Livshar, Rav Shmuel Mekarcha uses that language. In general, there are halachas that apply to din that don't apply to Pshara. Pshara says, the Gemara actually quotes Pesukim here. The Gemara, beginning of Sanhedrin, it quotes, for example, a Pasuk regarding Pshara. It says, Emes, Mishpat, Shalom, Shiftu, B'sharecha. That's one Pasuk. Or by David HaMelech, Vahi David, it says, Beso, Mishpat, Utsdoka. Ezeu, Mishpat, Sheeshba, Shalom, Utsdoka, Haviyomi, Zub Pshara, Zubitsua. There's a problem over here because on the one hand, the Gemara speaks about, shall we say, an aspect of Mishpat. The other hand, the Gemara speaks about Shalom. In the other pasuk, the Gemara speaks about Mishpat and speaks about Tzedakah. It would seem to be that they have a contradiction, an oxymoron here. You have two terms that are clearly in opposition, one to the other. That's what Absalvation pointed out. And in secular courts, we know very well that one of the parties, generally speaking, the judge issues a decision, one of the parties wins, one of the parties loses. That's basically what litigation is all about. One is defeated and one prevails. One actually wins. If you ever go to any kind of judicial situation, let me just finish one point. And victory is total for one of the parties. However, Chazal felt that there's a need to come to a settlement, a reconciliation, an arbitration, however you want to define this particular process. But here, essentially, what Chazal felt is that both parties should be, in effect, should emerge not totally unscathed, because at the end of the day, obviously, one party is going to perhaps, in some respects, a bit prevail over the other, but Chazal felt that the idea of Pshara, each one gets a piece of the action with no real victor. That was the idea. So I'll let you explain Pshara. Yeah, Alex.
I was
going to
say, I asked my dad one time, my dad's a lawyer, but he was telling me that almost every single case, like 99% of cases, probably settle before they even get to the court systems, and because it's such a hassle by the time you actually get your hearing and everything, that most of the time they just want to make a settle. They just want to settle.
I heard that also from many lawyers. Your father's not a criminal lawyer, is he?
It's very hard.
No. Criminal law is very difficult for an Orthodox Jew to be involved in, for many reasons without getting into details right now. But it's another conversation, another shiur. What was that? But the point I'm saying that you're normally speaking, and you're 100% right. I heard this from many lawyers in the course of the last several decades. But usually, as I said, in a regular situation of a court context, so what happens that as a result of one person being victorious and the other one losing, there's a deepening of the hatred and animosity is intensified. And obviously, shalom is left to the psychologist or the psychiatrist or to people are going to be able to offer medicaments and therapies and what have you to the other one individual who sustained a massive loss, etc. But here, and this is what the Soloveitchik, I think, in the most absolutely beautiful analysis of this parasha, was trying to explain to the tzibur that he was speaking to, and then I asked him once individually about this before I heard the shir, and he also gave me a precis of what he was going to say, and that is there's a fundamental machlokas here between Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu regarding a perspective on what courts are all about. This is what the Rav suggested, and it's based on Chazal. And here he pointed out that Moshe Rabbeinu is not simply a bewigged and besotted kind of magistrate sitting over there, Al Kisei Rav Nisa, but I'm now going to show you the Lashonos, which I actually went looking in the Mechilta and also in the Medrash, and Rav Soloveitchik alluded to all of this, these Midrashim, and I'll show you what I'm talking about in one moment. Essentially, his point was that here Moshe Rabbeinu was articulating the concept of, number one, pshara and bitzua, but beyond that, that a judge is not simply a magistrate who is issuing piskei din al kisei Rav and Issa, but he's primarily a Rebbe. He's primarily someone who's concerned about the two parties that come before him, about the two litigants, and they're not simply, shall we say, the way most courts, as I understand them, view the litigants in front of them. I don't really have time for this, but I think I did tell you once, only once in my life was I in a court of law in the Bronx for a parking violation, allegedly that I don't think I really was in violation, but apparently I parked on the red, probably 3 inches of my car were on the red, whilst it was in the blue, was it actually in order. I even took pictures and brought with me two of my chaverim who are lawyers, and I saw when I came to court, there was a long line, and the judge looked like someone who essentially had not slept in about 7 days. I'm sorry?
It's better to go to court in the mornings.
Okay, I will now, hopefully I won't have to take your advice in the future. But anyway, after each individual came and presented their case, they didn't really have much of an opportunity. And the judge basically said to all about the 9 or 10 people in front of me, guilty as charged. Speak to the bailiff. And then the next one went and he was given a fine of several hundred smackers. And then the third one came, was also guilty as charged. Before I saw myself, and I brought two lawyers. I brought an entire dossier of pictures to show that the fellow obviously did not see the proper angle and didn't handle it properly. And then my turn came after waiting 2 hours. And the judge at that point, you can imagine, was in a state of stupefaction after 2 hours of listening to all the others that preceded me. And I come and I'm in a very passionate kind of mood, and he's came out dead to the world, almost at the end of his existence. And I begin to present my case. And he told me, okay, speak. And I begin to speak. After about a minute, he says, there's a charge here of a parking violation. I said, excuse me, Your Honor, I have what to say. The charge has no foundation. It's not substantiated. I brought me two barristers who will also present my case. So right away, he looks at me and says, you seem to be a bit on the perky side today. Bizarre lotion. Perky meaning I had 7 cups of coffee. I don't know how many I had, but I had probably a few. Anyway, to make a long story short, he let me speak for about 5 minutes. And then, of course, what came at the end? Guilty as charged. Pay the bailiff. So I wanted to say, what kind of a kangaroo court is this? But Chesky, I didn't do it, because I knew that my fine would be doubled and trebled and who knows what. And so I simply went to bite the bullet. But whatever the case is, it was clearly a kangaroo court, unquestionably. And I was not given a day in court. And the whole thing was absolutely full of machinations. And as far as I'm concerned, totally without any foundation whatsoever. Okay, but back over here. So that's not what we're obligated and what we're going to do. And that's what I want to show you now. What Rav Soloveitchik explained to me. Mimachos Yom HaKippurim. Vayi mimachos vayesh Moshe lishpat asaam. And the conclusion is, as I said a moment ago, and this is what I want to show you, that a shofet is not simply someone who is a barrister or a judge or a magistrate who's involved in judicial legal action, but he's someone who's concerned about the totality of human relationships. That's the function of a shofet. And here's where Yisro did not understand this concept. Yisro understood the whole idea of the judicial system as being one that I described earlier, the one that I went to in the Bronx, Avdil. That's what a judicial system, you go before a magistrate, go before a judge, his function is purely din, and that's the end of it. One is guilty, one is, shall we say, not guilty, and that ends the entire story. However, if you look at the psukim over here, you'll see that is exactly not the case in the context of a shofet, and that's what Yisro totally misunderstood. Yisro tells Moshe Rabbeinu, and now I want to stress the language. Basically, what are you doing? And the word Oseh, as I mentioned a few times, is reiterated by the Torah a number of times. Basically, Yisro sees a judge, or Moshe Rabbeinu, as someone who's sitting al kisei Rav and Issa, and therefore that is distasteful, and in effect, called yourselves to stand before him. And Yisro is saying that, obviously, this entire approach, which is the approach of the entire world in general, Vayamud ha'am ha'moshe min ha'boki ad ha'erev. And v'chalam nitzor v'alecha min ha'boki ad ha'erev. Etc. He's talking about simply someone who is sitting over there and I'm sitting over here and the distance between us is almost unbridgeable. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yisro, you are sorely mistaken. Look at the Lashon of Moshe Rabbeinu. He tells Yisro, Ki yava ilai ha'am, why are people coming to a din Torah? Lidrosh Elokim. This whole Marechet Hashiput is not, as you think, a purely secular kind of enterprise, but rather, there's a religious element that is embedded in this entire enterprise. And further, V'shapati ben ishu ben re'eyu. The Ramban writes here something unbelievable. Ki yava ilai ha'am lidrosh Elokim. What does that sound like? The Ramban says, sounds like tefillah. The Ramban says that the job of a magistrate, of a shofet, is to, shall we say, lehikones, to enter the particular situation of the one who's standing before him, recognize his anguish, his stress, his distress, his sorrow, his need, and sometimes Moshe Rabbeinu says, according to the Ramban, they asked me to become an admor, to daven to Hashem Yisbarach, to be a friend, to be mishtati b'tzaras chavero. That's the language of v'shafati bein ishu bein re'eyu. We're talking about two individuals who are human beings, two individuals who have, as I said, all types of human emotions, ups and downs, zigzags, foibles, pluses, minuses, correct? That's what we're talking about. And ki elahem davar bo elai v'shafati bein ishu bein re'eyu. I'm not simply, shall we say, someone who's two litigants who are, as far as I'm concerned, foreign, and who are individuals who have no connection with me, I have no nexus with them whatsoever, there's no bonding between us, it is a cold, calculating, cool, kind of juridic relationship, chas v'sholom. That's not what it's all about. But rather, I resolve conflicts between people, and in the course of it, v'odati eschuke elokim estarosav. What am I trying to do? I'm a friend, I'm a teacher, I'm a Rebbe, I'm ministering divine justice, mishpat, tzedakah b'shalom, not simply, shall we say, as a moment ago, someone who's a cold judicial magistrate, bewigged and besotted. That's how our Soloveitchik understood the Parsha. Now, I tell you, I think it is very meduyak in the Lashon of the Parsha. You could disagree, but I think it's also borne out by Mechilta, a number of Midrashim, that our Soloveitchik referred to in analyzing this Parsha. Look at the way, again, when Yisro presents, let me just sum up my point. When Yisro comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, look at the language, you doubt it. And that's what I stressed before. Vayachose Moshe, kol asher hu oselam. Ma adobar hazeh asher ata oselam. Ata yoshev levadecha, you are on your own, you're over here, and they're over there, and there's a lineup like the court in the Bronx, min boke ad orev. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you are mistaken, sorely mistaken, operating under an egregious error. What the nature of Marechat HaShiput is all about, what the judicial enterprise is all about. Not as you think, and not as you perceive it, and not as you see it, but rather, take a look. Ki Yavoi Elai Ha'am leads Rosh Elokim. They're seeking out Hashem. And that's basically, by the way, what Dinei Torah are all about. Dinei Torah are seeking out Hashem. We have a Chesh Mishpat. We have a Shulchan Aruch. Our Shulchan Aruch is based on Chazal, based on Gemaris, based on Rishonim, based on, shall we say, objective criteria, as opposed to, with all due respect, criteria that's often found in the secular world, which can be very impartial and very unobjective. Not the way Yisro described it. Kol ha'am nitzov alecha min boker ad orev. Kol ha'am means people who are without any identity, depersonalized, dehumanized, delegitimized, lacking any, shall we say, persona. No. V'shafati ben ishu ben re'eyu. V'odati eschuki elokim v'yestarosa. Continues the Chosei Moshe, because he somehow missed the boat. Lo tova davar she'ata oseh. Navol tibol, gam ha'om. Again, he constantly speaks of om. Pasuk yutes. Ato shema b'kol yotzcha v'hi elokim imach v'hi ato la'om. And Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about individuals, Beinishu, Beinu, it's a totally different perspective. That's how our Salesh was Medaik in the Psukim. I thought the Diyuk is absolutely wondrous. So let me just finish my point and then you can speak. And therefore, our Salesh, in light of this, explain there's a Rashi here. Rashi quotes a Mechilta in this beginning. Rashi says, Kol Dayan, Shadon din emes lamito, malo akosum, kilo osi batora kolayom. Ukilo nasa shudva kolishboka maxi beratius. A very famous chazal. Any dayan who judges honestly, even for one moment, is considered as if he's learning Torah the entire day. And secondly, he becomes a partner to Hashem in the course of creating the world. Shenemar, Vayera Ibokah Yom Echad. There's another medrash. Vayera Ibokah Yom Echad Zeh Yom Kippurim. That's a medrash beginning of Bereishis. In other words, basically, what the medrash, what Rashi is telling us, to judge is not simply to be someone who is a cold, cool, calculating lawyer, happens to be a magistrate at this point in time in his career, but rather it means someone who is going to, in effect, be a Rebbe, connect the individuals, the litigants who are in front of him to Hashem Yisbarach, and the impact of instruction, obviously, the way we're talking about Bitzua or Pshara is designed that people should emerge, not that one hates the other, and not that one is envious of the individual who prevailed, who was victorious, but rather they should recognize that here there was an effort made to effect some sort of rapprochement between the two litigants, and that they should emerge not as those who are Rahman al-Hassan with venom against one another, but rather because there's still a sense of friendship and Ava v'yachla v'shol v'reyes. Where is this derived from? So Absalvechi thought it's derived dafka from where? From Yom Kippur. Vahimi mochras. Vayeshe v'yashe lishpat asam. And now I'll share with you something else, which is also a famous comment of Absalvechi. I think I did mention this a number of times. Actually, this is found, probably, you may be familiar, there's a very beautiful sefer that I quoted often, Darash Darash Yese. So there, in that sefer, I read in that sefer some very beautiful piece, also from Rav Soloveitchik, that the Mechaber writes the following. And this is really connected to this whole idea of Ayimi Machros. You know that Yom Kippur, there's both a kapara for the Yochin and a kapara for the Tzibur. You're aware of that. There's something very striking in the Ashkenazic Nusach of Yom Kippur night, I'm talking about El Kol Nidre, that there's a statement that's made in the context of Kol Nidre. Right before Kol Nidre, we make the following statement. Onu matirin lehispalel im ha'avar yonim. We're now about to daven together with who? Avar yonim, which the Mefarshim say referred to Poshim. Poshim are Poshim, someone who does a chet, b'mered, someone who is a rebel. There are three levels. There's chet, which of course is shogeg, and then there's mezid, which is avon, and pesha. Pesha is mardan. Mardan is someone who rebels against Hashem Yisbarach, who's an individual who does things lahachis. So in Yom Kippur, we have a statement that precedes all this called nidre, that we're about to daven together with the avar yonim. What does that mean? So the Gemara says in Krisus that Ko Tainus Shem Bami Poshe Yisrael Inner Tainus. It refers to Yom Kippur. Any Tainus that doesn't have, that doesn't include the Poshe Yisrael, people who are Poshea, is not called the Tainus. So, in effect, how does that happen? How can you correct a Kaparas HaTzibur when you have also among the Tzibur Poshe Yisrael, people who are Mardanim, rebels, people who are Lahachesnikim, people who do things in spite, people who do things malevolently, people who are obviously malicious in their entire approach? How do we affect the kapara for these individuals? So the answer, of course, is that, and this is what Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, he said that Yom Kippur has several names. I don't know if you say Piyutim, you probably don't, I don't blame you, but no one likes Piyutim anymore. I actually happen to love Piyutim. I grew up on Piyutim, and then little by little, they disappeared on me. People don't like Piyutim. They don't like Bahab. They don't like Piyutim. What else don't they like?
Yeah, Bahab's the word.
Tachnun on Monday, Thursday.
Times are worse.
Long Tachnun. I just want to get to breakfast. And then it's like, oh, slop
I think one of the Rabbeim and our yeshiva spoke about you today. Anyway, the shmooze that he gave.
I don't recall that.
Maybe you were in the arms of Morpheus at that moment.
There's a comedian over there.
I was.
So, Yom Kippur has one name, Yom Kippur. Number two, Shabbat Shabbat Sol. Number three, Tzom Kippur. So Rav Soloveitchik was only in the language of Tzom Kippur. Tzom generally means what? A fast. But he said that the term Tzom is related to a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. Sfaradim say on Friday night Shir Hashirim, I think Ashkenazim, literally on Pesach, you do it every week. Excellent. You have the niggun.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Anyway, there's a pasuk there that says, Mibad Tzamasech. The word Tzom is related to the word Mitzama. Mem Tzadik Mem Hei. It's actually Gemara on Shabbos. The Gemara points out, if I take braids, and I want to braid, shall we say, I want to create an entire braid. So what I do, I take strands of hair, I plait them together, and by virtue of that, I create a braid. There's an interesting Menig Yerushalayim that the Gemara in Ksubis, you know, on 9 days, the Gemara says that, Kofs and the Psukim in the context of Pasha of Seita, the Gemara says, Ufar Asmei Sheisha Mikan Libinos Yisrael Shalot Telachna Pruas Rosh. Libinos Yisrael referred to not married women, but rather single women. They shouldn't go with their heads uncovered. So the Gemara is mashma, kach medai kavagad Avram, that in Siman 9 hey, that you see from there that single women should somehow find some sort of hair covering that they have to cover their hair with. We don't have single women who cover their hair. Yerushalmi, young women, in the Chassidish Shavel, they have braids. I don't know, you probably never noticed because you don't see any members of the other side. But that's a minhag Yerushalayim based on this Magen Avraham. We don't pass an halacha like that. But it's based on that Gemara. Mikan the Benos Yisrael shall telachna pruos rosh. They have braids. They take strands of hair, they plant them together, and they wear braids to show, they're demonstrating the fact that there's a kind of kisa rosh that according to the Magen Avraham, they're mechuyev. Okay, I say with halacha, most poskim don't agree with the Magen Avraham. We don't pass like that. Mishavura doesn't pass like that. Sivan 9a, where he quotes the halacha of Sabi She'er, the Gemara Brachas and Chavdalit. He doesn't bring that halacha. Whatever the case is, so the Rav said that we're taking strands of hair and putting them together. So that's what goes on Yom Kippurim. We're taking different strands of hair, Jews who commit Averas B'Shogeg, Jews who commit Averas B'Mezid, and even Poshim, and we bring them all together in order to effect the Kaparas HaTzibur. That's what we're trying to do. This is found in Darsh Darsh Yosef, in Pasha Nisovim. I recall seeing it there. And so there he describes at great length this very beautiful Darsh of Rav Soloveitchik. I liked it a match. I gave them a chabad big yashikach. Anyway, so the shiur was said in Yiddish. One of the two of the lashes, Rav Soloveitchik, and the chabad translated it into English. But the reason why I say all this is now we understand something else. And in Ashkenazic Nusach, I think you have it also. In Ashkenazic Nusach, after the Avod of Yom Kippur, we describe Yom Kippurim, Yom She'asar v'chamisha inuim, it's a day that's asar the 5 inuim, asar b'achila, asar b'shliya, asar b'sicha, thank you, asar b'nesas sando, asar b'tashmish amita. Then it says, Yom Simas Ava v'reyus, Yom Azivas kinu v'tacharus. Do you recall that, Loshen? I know the Avodah, because I know the Baal Musaf, who davens in every shul that I've been to for the last, several decades. So anyway, so he says that part of the appeal. A day, Yom Kippur is a day of Simas Ava Vireyus, a day of love and friendship, and a day of Azivas Kina V'tachos, abandoning Kina, jealousy, and competitiveness, which of course is competitive, not of a positive nature. There is some positive nature to competitiveness. When I see the Rebbe who gave the beautiful shmuz today, I want to be like him. When I see the Rabbi and the Yeshiva Torah Shraga, I want to be like them. That's a good kina. Kina Sevim Tabi Chochma. The other types of kina that are not so healthy, as you undoubtedly are aware. When I see this young man, I want to be like him. I'm not joking. Have your midos, your sterling luster of character. You're not the only one. There's a whole group right here. Baruch Hashem. Bechitza, bechitza. I have to take your and adopt your mahalach. He means well. You have to get to all the mechitzas. But anyway, it's only. So now that's what we understand by Himi Machras. That's the connection to Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur is the day where we're taking literally so many different types of Jews and bringing them together. That's exactly the function of a shofet, not as Yisrael saw it, a cold, cool kind of magistrate where the distance between myself and the litigants is unbridgeable, a gulf that is well nigh impossible to bridge. But rather, You see the individuals in front of you as members of Klal Yisrael, as individuals you have to show to them. Of course, you're judging them. You're adjudicating your case, unquestionably, but it has to be with objectivity. But we try to achieve pshara and bitzua to the point where there will be no enmity and no animosity and no rancor between them, but rather we'll be able to somehow develop Abba V'Yachva V'Shol Maria. So this is why that Moshe, of course, he understood what a judicial system is all about. But he had a totally different perspective on a judicial system than his shver. Usually sons-in-laws and shvers don't always agree, as you will hopefully not discover. I happen to, Baruch Hashem, get along famously with my shver, Zechen Levracha, the big tzaddik, and my mother-in-law, also tzaddikis. So Baruch Hashem, I didn't have any difficulty. Some people have difficulties. I'm not sure exactly why. I think if you are someone who's a Baal Dacheretz and a mensch, and someone who is, so he said, possesses the requisite midos and the like, you cannot, there's no reason to have any difficulty with a shver or a shviger and the like. But here is an example of a gulf between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yisro in terms of how they view the perspective of the judicial system. That's how our salvation saw this issue. And Vayimi Machras connects us with really what we think is the ideal. We can disagree with each other. I say this all the time. You and I can have different opinions on different hashkafas even. But it doesn't mean that we can't interact with each other in the most wholesome, beautiful way. We don't agree necessarily here, all of us with each other. And I happen to develop this year because of this gentleman over here sitting right in front of me. I became more involved. He doesn't know about it, but he's responsible for my, once again, starting to learn the Kutei Torah, which I have not done in many, many years. And also, I decided to revisit a few other svarim along the way. I happen to possess a fair number of them, more than you think I do. But of course, they're in a different part of my house, so you wouldn't see them, shall we say, necessarily in an open kind of way. I realize, and the older you get, the more you recognize that there's so much out there, Baruch Hashem, from the different elements of Klal Yisrael. And Baruch Hashem, Haleinu Mikol Adam is a very important leader that we have to acquire. Yes?
Why did Moshe listen to him?